All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to be looking at Energy Corp v. Riverkeeper, Inc.
That's right, 2009. Big environmental law case, really important one.
Huge, especially if you're in law school, you know, trying to figure out how all this works. It's a really interesting case, though, even if you aren't in law school.
Oh, yeah. You get into some fascinating stuff.
For sure. So basically what this case comes down to is how much the EPA can consider costs when they're deciding on what counts as the best available technology to protect the environment.
Exactly. And that's a tricky question. On the one hand, you've got this mandate to protect the environment. But on the other hand, you've got these companies that have to, you know, foot the bill for all these new technologies.
Right. And power plants are a perfect example.
Oh, absolutely. They use a ton of water for cooling, and that can have a pretty big impact on aquatic life.
So let's talk about that. What's the actual environmental problem we're dealing with here?
Well, so power plants draw water from nearby sources, like rivers and lakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they use that water to cool down their systems.
Okay.
But the problem is that when they pull in all that water, they can end up sucking in a lot of aquatic organisms, too.
Oh, I see. Makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like a giant vacuum cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two main ways this can harm aquatic life.
Okay, lay it on me.
So first, you've got what's called impingement. That's when larger organisms, like fish, get trapped against the screens that are supposed to filter out debris.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it can be pretty brutal. They can get injured or even die.
Wow.
And then you've got entrainment. That's when smaller organisms, like fish eggs and larvae, get pulled right through the screens and into the cooling system.
Oh, so they just get sucked right in.
Yep. Yeah. And those little guys usually don't survive the trip through the power plant.
Jeez. So that's where the EPA comes in, I guess.
Right. They have to try to regulate this stuff.
So what do they do?
Well, under Section 316B of the Clean Water Act, the EPA issued these regulations called Phase 2 regulations.
Phase 2, okay.
Yeah. And these regulations were designed to minimize this harm to aquatic life by requiring power plants to adopt what they call the best technology available, or BTA.
BTA.
To reduce the impact of these cooling water intake structures.
Makes sense. So how does the best technology available get decided?
Well, that's where things get a little tricky. The EPA said that when determining the BTA, they could consider the costs of these new technologies.
So like a cost-benefit analysis.
Exactly. So like how much does the technology cost to implement versus how much environmental benefit does it provide?
I see. But I bet the environmental groups didn't love that.
You got it. That's where the conflict came in. Groups like Riverkeeper, they argued that the Clean Water Act shouldn't allow for balancing costs against environmental benefits when it comes to these intake structures.
So they're saying, hey, the best technology is the best technology, regardless of the cost.
Right. They felt the law required a sole focus on what's most effective for protecting aquatic life, period.
Okay, I see their point. So that's what this whole case boiled down to, whether the EPA could consider costs in determining the best technology available.
Yeah, it was a big question about the EPA's authority, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court.
No kidding. And what did the Supreme say?
Well, in a 6-3 decision, they actually sided with the EPA. They said it was okay for the EPA to use cost-benefit analysis in this context.
So a win for the EPA.
You could say that. And the majority opinion was written by Justice Scalia, which is kind of interesting in itself.
Why is that?
Well, because Scalia wasn't exactly known for being a big environmentalist. But in this case, he made a pretty compelling argument based on this idea of what's called statutory ambiguity.
Statutory ambiguity, what's that?
Well, it basically means that the language of the law isn't perfectly clear. And Scalia argued that the phrase best technology available in Section 316B didn't explicitly say whether costs should be a factor or not.
So because Congress didn't specifically say no to considering costs, Scalia is saying it could be okay.
Right. He's basically saying that since there's this ambiguity, the EPA has some leeway to interpret the law.
I get it. That makes sense.
But Scalia went even further than that. He also used this thing called comparative statutory analysis.
Okay, comparative statutory analysis. Now you're just using big words to try and impress me.
Hey, I can't help it. It's the law. But anyway, what Scalia did was he looked at other parts of the Clean Water Act, like Section 306, where Congress specifically did include language about considering costs and benefits.
Okay.
And because that language was there in some sections, but not in 316B, Scalia said, Well, that must mean Congress did that on purpose.
So the fact that they didn't explicitly mention cost in 316B means they were giving the EPA more flexibility there.
Right. It's like they were saying, we know how to include cost considerations when we want to, and we chose not to here.
So kind of like a legal loophole?
You could say that. And then to top it all off, the court also relied on something called Chevron deference.
Oh, yeah. Chevron deference. That's a big one, right?
It's huge. Basically, it means that when a law is ambiguous, the courts will defer to the agency's interpretation of that law, as long as it's reasonable.
So the EPA gets to have the final say, as long as they're not being totally crazy.
Pretty much. And the court decided that the EPA's interpretation in this case, which allowed for cost-benefit analysis, was reasonable.
So a trifecta of arguments in favor of the EPA. Statutory ambiguity, comparative statutory analysis, and Chevron deference.
That's right. And Scalia even pointed out that the environmental groups themselves acknowledged that there had to be some limit to how much money you spend to protect the environment.
Okay, I'm curious about that. What do you mean?
Well, they brought up this example of spending billions of dollars to save one fish. And even they admitted that that would be kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I can see that.
So the court took that to mean that even the most ardent environmental advocates recognized a point where cost had to be a factor.
Fascinating. So this Scalia guy, not as anti-environment as some people might think.
It's hard to say, but he certainly made a pragmatic argument in this case.
Well, I guess that's the law for you, right? It's not always black and white.
Absolutely. And this case is a great example of that. You've got valid arguments on both sides.
And it wasn't a unanimous decision.
Right? Oh, no. There were some strong dissenting opinions.
Tell me about them.
Okay, so Justice Breyer, he actually agreed with the majority on the core issue. He thought it was okay for the EPA to consider costs.
Okay.
But he had a problem with how the EPA was defining what too costly meant when it came to giving these power plants a break, a variance from the rules.
Ah, I see.
He thought they were being too lenient, and he wanted them to justify that decision better.
Makes sense. So what about the other dissenters?
Justice Stevens wrote the main dissent, and he really went after the majority on this one. He felt very strongly that Congress intended to exclude cost considerations when it came to Section 316B.
So he's looking at the same law, the same language, and coming to a completely different conclusion.
That's right. He focused on the structure of the Clean Water Act as a whole and its legislative history. And he basically argued that Congress intentionally restricted the use of cost-benefit analysis to certain specific parts of the law.
And Section 316B wasn't one of them.
Exactly. And Stevens made this really interesting point about what he called the technology forcing aspect of the Clean Water Act.
Technology forcing? What's that all about?
Well, the idea is that this law was written in a way that would push industries to develop and adopt the best possible technologies for protecting the environment, even if those technologies were expensive.
Okay.
So Stevens argued that allowing cost-benefit analysis would undermine that whole purpose.
Because if companies can argue that the cost is too high, they might get to use older, dirtier technology.
Right. Stevens was worried that this would create a loophole where environmental protection would take a backseat to economic concerns.
Yeah, that's a valid concern.
And he was pretty blunt about it. He basically said that the majority's decision weakened the whole point of the Clean Water Act.
So this case really highlights those fundamental tensions in environmental law, huh?
Big time. You've got this constant push and pull between protecting the environment and keeping things affordable for businesses.
And there's no easy answer.
Not at all. But that's what makes it so interesting, right?
Definitely.
So what are some of the broader implications of this case?
Well, for one thing, it gives the EPA a lot of leeway in how they regulate industries.
More flexibility, huh?
Yeah. The court basically said, you can consider costs when you're making these decisions, and we're going to give you a fair amount of deference.
And that could be good or bad, depending on how you look at it.
Exactly. It could lead to more pragmatic regulations that are easier for companies to comply with, but it could also lead to weaker environmental protections.
It all depends on how the EPA uses this power.
Right. And it also reinforces the importance of Chevron deference in environmental law. This idea that the courts are going to trust the expertise of the agencies, at least to a certain extent.
So for our law students out there, this case is a must read, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a classic example of how these legal principles play out in the real world.
And also shows just how complex environmental law can be.
No kidding. It's not just about science. It's about politics, economics, and all sorts of other factors.
So the big takeaway here is that the Supreme Court said it's okay for the EPA to consider costs when deciding what the best technology available is.
That's right. And that decision was based on some pretty important legal principles, like Chevron deference and statutory interpretation.
But it also raises some important questions about how we balance environmental protection with economic concern.
And those questions are going to keep coming up again and again as we try to navigate the challenges of the 21st century.
For sure. Well, on that note, I think we've covered a lot of ground today.
We have. Great discussion.
As always. So for our listeners out there, I hope this deep dive into Entergy v. Riverkeeper has given you a better understanding of this complex and crucial case. It's a decision that continues to shape environmental law and policy today.
Absolutely. And it raises some really fundamental questions about how we prioritize environmental protection in a world with limited resources. It's a debate that we're all going to have to grapple with as citizens, as lawyers, and as human beings.
Well said. And with that, we'll leave you to ponder those questions. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.
Until next time.
See them.